Welcome to episode 170 of the Atomic Powered Supercast with your hosts Andrew, David, and Jen. This week, we read Fantastic Four, The Ultimate Collection by Mark Waid. And now, the cast begins.
I know he once a month.
Good, cool.
Because I like Green Lantern stuff, and it's going to be like Fear Itself, where there's boosters specially for the OP.
Yeah, but there it's like a larger set, right?
Right. So it's a 90. It's 96 pieces, I think. It's huge.
How big was Fear Itself?
36.
Oh, good. Because that's why you have how many? What's red? No, not red. The Red Skull's daughter, Sin.
Sin. Yeah, I have a ton of them.
Yeah, I have so many prodigies.
Well, what's cool too about the for War of Light, they're going to split the set in half. So the first half of the tournament, or the first half of the OP event, we're going to do the first half of the set, and then the rest are going to be the other set, or the next half.
Okay.
And so the resource we get this time is the Green Lantern battery, and the little relics that go with it are constructs.
Nice. Okay, I'm down for this.
And then so like the AVX, the participant prizes are a figure in addition to the constructs. And so some of them are the Earth Green Lanterns. So one of the OP participation prizes is Guy Gardner.
Nice. Okay, I need to get that one.
Yeah, I think he's like month three or something. Okay. And I think John Stewart and Kyle are also participation prizes.
Good. The Kyle one I really want too.
And Hal Jordan is in the scenario pack. Remember how they had the scenario packs for Fear Itself?
Yeah.
Where it was like Sin and Captain America and stuff?
Yeah.
So the first one's going to be Sinestro and Hal Jordan.
All right. I'm down for that. You know, we should do another Green Lantern arc for this show.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're doing mostly Sinestro. About Hal, but like
we should do Sinestro Corps War. That's a
yeah.
You know, I really want to do one with Guy and Kyle because I, as much as I love so many of the Lanterns, Hal is not my favorite, and so much of the good Lantern stories like focus around Hal. I love Kyle, and Guy is always fun to read.
We should do Green Lantern Corps, the Geoff Johns Green Lantern Corps.
We should, ooh, and I fucking,
because that is that's not Hal.
And I have a couple. I love that series. Patrick
Gleason. I have some of the trades from that Green Lantern Corps. So
I have the entire run in trades.
Oh, nice.
That's also the run that I have original art from.
Cool.
Oh, cool.
And do we want to do it after this one?
Yeah, sure. What the fuck?
Oh, that'd yeah. So I wanted to about that.
Oh yes.
I'm probably gonna have to go like on hiatus maybe.
Yeah, no problem.
For a little while.
Yeah, understandable.
So. Yeah, I don't know what you guys want to do.
Well, I can see if we can find somebody to come in and guest for a while.
Sure.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Maybe have some rotating guests. Oh, you know what you should do? You should do a Green Lantern episode with John Pingle.
Yes! Genius. I'll see if he's down for it.
Yeah. And maybe if you want to do Thunderbolts, you could get Brandon to do it with you. Maybe. I don't know. I'm just throwing ideas out there. Or do Iron Man with Mitch.
Oh yeah, we could do another Iron Man run.
Or get Shelby to do an episode or two.
And did we ever do Birds of Prey? We did do Birds of Prey for this, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, we did.
Oh, with part of the Gale Simone arc, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Shelby could do like fucking half of anything.
Yeah, so I mean, it's up to you guys what you want to do.
Yeah.
But I think after the FF arc, I'll probably go on hiatus for a little while. Just until things get settled down.
We already did Captain America too, didn't we?
Yeah. But it was like more old school stuff, like comics from the 70s.
Guys.
So.
Mm-hmm.
Batroc's in the movie.
Batroc the Leaper?
Yes. Except he's not called the Leaper.
Yeah.
Except on his HeroClix piece, the Captain America Winter Soldier. Batroc the Leaper Pyroclix piece. Mm-hmm. He's just called Batroc, but then his trait is called the Leaper. So he has Leap Climb and something else. Oh, Sidestep, I think. But anyways, yeah.
Yeah.
Batroc's going to be in it. I'm excited.
I'm so happy that we're at a point where, like, movie theaters can put in this kind of random crap, and everybody will be, like, cool with it. Like, a fucking raccoon with a machine gun.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you think about, like, 10 years ago, like, no, more than 10 years ago, like, 15 years ago, right? Like, nobody would have put that in a movie. It would have come off as campy and stupid, but, like, we're at the point now where, like, the general level of nerdiness, the minimum, is high enough that we can do shit like this.
Yeah.
I love that. Oh, if only we can get a good Fantastic Four movie.
Well, Fox owns the rights, so there you go.
Yeah. Did either one of you guys ever see the Rise of the Silver Surfer one?
Nope.
I was so mad at that movie.
It has my favorite example, though, of... you can tell me why you're mad in a second. It has my favorite example of product placement. Like, Richards builds the hover car thing that they're all in together, all four of them. And I think it's Johnny Storm says, that thing's really cool. And then Reed, like, pulls his head and his hand over to the front of it and puts, like, his thumb and points at a badge and says, it's got a Hemi in it. And there's a big old Dodge sticker on the thing. I'm like, what the fuck? That doesn't even make any goddamn sense. It's something he built in his garage. Why would he put a Dodge sticker on it? Why would he put Dodge badges on this?
That's really dumb.
Built fucking thing. Would he put a Fantastic Four on it? Like, what are you doing?
I hate it because they turned Galactus into a cloud.
Yeah.
And I didn't like how they defeated Galactus, because didn't, like, Silver Surfer absorb the powers of the Fantastic Four? And I was like, they just made him the Super Skrull.
Yeah, Super Skrull beats Galactus, apparently. I didn't mind the cloud thing, because, you know, like, Galactus is whatever... Isn't it true that, like, Galactus changes what he is based on the person perceiving him?
Yeah,
kind of a
he
thing?
Doesn't change.
Yeah, he's the same, but your perception is altered based on your experience of reality.
Yeah, like, how you perceive him, how he's perceived changes depending on who's seeing him.
Yeah.
So, but I still was,
like, the cloud I can kind of get.
I guess putting a purple guy with... We weren't there yet. We could do Galactus the right way now.
You could do it now. I especially think you could do it now.
He would be a little bit stylized, but...
But that's fine, you know, because...
Anyways.
I think you could make it the same way that you make, like, Attack on Titan, how the Colossal Titan is so fucking scary. Right? Because
yeah.
It's just, like... He's massive, and just the fact that he's massive is freakish, right? Like, you could just have Galactus standing there, just standing in space, even though there's no up, down, gravity, sideways, whatever, and just have his hand out and, like, his fingers coming around the globe, and, like, like, fucking epic music playing. It'd be great.
Yeah. So should we talk about Fantastic Four?
Yeah, you guys ready?
Sure.
All right, everybody, welcome to another fantastic episode of the Atomic Powered Supercast. My name is Andy, and I'm hanging out with Jen.
Hey.
David.
Hey.
And this week, we read Fantastic Four, the Ultimate Collection, Volume Number 1, by Mark Waid, with art from Mike Wieringo. This collects issues 60 to 66 of the run from 1998.
And some of you, let me just interject there.
What's up?
Some of you might have been confused when looking up these issues, because they were dual-numbered. So 60 was also number 489.
Okay, thank you. Okay, that's why I was so confused. Because I was in the Marvel Digital Unlimited, and at the top it had this thing that was like editor's pitch, and this run of Fantastic Four happened to be there. So I clicked on it, and it was like numbered 60 to 66. I'm like, okay, great. And I just start reading it. And then I went back to find it later, and it wasn't the front on the carousel on the top on MDCU. So I typed in Fantastic Four, Mark Waid. And something came up, and I was like, where's the number, 60's number? It's like 500-something. What the fuck is going on here?
Yeah, they were dual-numbered. So if you have the actual the individual issues, it's has 60, so like 66 says 66, and then next to it in a lighter color, it says 495. So.
Oh, God.
That is awful. They need to not do that.
Yeah.
Well... I don't know. I go back and forth. Because if you get a property like Fantastic Four that's that old, you kind of want to preserve the numbering because it's prestigious, right? You can be like, look at how long this comic has been around. You know? Like, a part of it is, this is a classic team. We want to pay homage to the legacy that these people represent. But at the same time, if you slap a number like 500-something on there, it's really, really scary for new readers.
Well, it's kind of weird, too, because, like, I think Marvel is a lot worse about this than DC is, because DC kept Action Comics numbering going all the way to New 52.
Yeah.
And then I understand why they started renumbering in the case of New 52. But Marvel does this thing where they kind of bounce around. So in Jonathan Hickman's run, which we're going to read later, there was an issue where this isn't a spoiler because it's like a few years old, when Johnny Storm died.
Yeah.
And I think they renumbered at that point. Like, it became number 600 again or something.
Yeah. So,
I remember that. There was, like, media outrage over it.
Yeah, and of course he didn't actually die.
Because it's comics.
I thought the way he came back was pretty cool, too. But you'll have to read the John Hickman run.
Yeah, I don't know about the coming back, but I'm hoping it's on MDCU. We'll see. Mm-hmm.
Anyway. I think it probably is. It's more than a year old, so it's probably up there.
So, back to Cape Comics, finally.
Yeah, we went. We read some highbrow stuff and then some manga, so...
Yeah, we read some real highbrow stuff. Like that Boxers and Saints, man, I'm still, like, pushing that on people.
I think the last Cape comic we read was probably Superior Spider-Man. Beginning of our...
Best of 2013.
That was like 5 or 6 episodes ago.
Yeah, and then before that it was the Cheesecake? That's not really capey. Taro is definitely not capey.
No, neither is Jungle Girl.
I keep bringing up Taro. It must have like ingrained itself in my memory. I wonder why, boobs.
Maybe it's one of those things like that which is seen cannot be unseen.
Maybe. I think it's because of the first time in the history of the podcast, when I posted the cover of the trade that we read on the website, I felt the need to blur it out.
That's got to be a first for you, Andy.
Yes. Yes. Because I put this project on things like resumes and job sites, I just want people going to that and seeing tarot covers. Anyway. What did you guys think of this comic?
So, you know, I've been into comics for a long time at varying degrees of into-ness. That's not even a word. But
it works.
When I first started getting into comics, I was like, it was the 90s, and X-Men was the shit. And Fantastic Four was one of those, it was like dorky, you know? It's like this family of whatever.
Feels like Leave It to Beaver.
Yeah. But, you know... Recently, in the last few years, I've really grown to like Fantastic Four, mainly because of the Jonathan Hickman run, and then following that, the Matt Fraction, which we're going to read for this series.
Yep.
But I had not read the Mark Waid run, but I had heard that it was very good. And you know what? I thought it was pretty good. I really enjoyed this comic. It was a good take on the Fantastic Four.
All right. So, Jen?
I thought that they did really... strong characterization for some characters, specifically Reed. And I think in every other trade we've read with the Fantastic Four in it, Reed has been my least favorite character. So it was really nice to see like this different side of him. And I don't know, it was nice to finally get away from comics where everyone dies all the time and you don't know what bad thing's going to happen next. And this was just nice and lighthearted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it's really interesting. Like, Reed is one of those characters that I feel changes a lot and still doesn't change, in that the core traits of his personality have kind of always been there, but how they've been represented or how they've been expressed through his character has changed with the times as we've figured out what's kind of how best to represent that core flaw of his, right? So, like, if you think of comics from, like, the 60s and 70s, right, that's where you get the panel of Reed walking by smacking Sue in the ass. And it's like, yeah, it's the 70s, but that's still not really cool in front of a whole bunch of people. That's a work setting. that's not really cool in front of her coworkers and shit. Like,
yeah.
You say 70s, but that's still inappropriate. And that's Reed just not thinking. That's Reed showing his primary character of thinking about an invention, thinking about an idea, and not being in the present. I think that's Reed's core problem, is he's never in the present. He's thinking about some idea, some invention, something he's working on, something he's building, and he's not thinking about the things that he's actively doing. And that has always been represented differently, and I really like the way that that's changed with him over time. Because we kind of saw bits of that in our Galactus series, but mostly I think of like the butt-smacking, and then there was a time when he was really, really negligent of his family. Like, to the point where, like, it was... A lot of people said that Reed was one of the more abusive characters in comics, even though you had literally abusive people like Hank Pym. Reed was the emotionally abusive father figure. But it's so interesting to see this expression of that trait and have it not be like, oh my god, that's so fucking wrong, but have it be more subtle and have it be like, he's just not really a good father, you know? But in a way that he realizes and can't help in a certain way.
Well, I think that in the past, a lot of the ways that we've seen him expressed is as being, like, really egotistical. And I think in this comic, he comes off more as confident than egotistical, but that confidence also leads him to bad places. But it's not like he's, I don't know, trying to be jerky because he thinks he's better. He's just so absorbed, like you said, in what he's doing. And I think that he is a good father. He really clearly, in this comic, shows how much he loves his children. And they're a huge priority for him. It's just he's not always good at being a good father. Like any normal person. He doesn't always, you know, show his children, you know, equal attention, even though he clearly loves them equally. He doesn't always, you know, keep his temper when he should. But I think that's a very human set of traits, so it makes Reed more, I don't know, likable or relatable in this one, rather than just being an abusive dickhead.
Yeah, I love that scene at the end of that issue when he's like, I told you there would be punishment, and he's like gonna attack with something and magic.
That was really cute.
And I love that they're playing Magic the Gathering, he cannot fucking understand it because the rules are shitty. Which, if you've ever played Magic, the rules are kind of wonky.
Well, I think that Reed's issue with his, it was kind of illogical, so he had, you know, trouble, you know, following it, because he couldn't see a pattern.
Because, yeah, and I'm sure if Reed wanted to invent a card game, it would make a lot more sense and be clear and simple and easy. Like, that's the kind of thing with him, is, you know, this goes back to his confidence, is you know, I know, everybody knows, Reed could make the best game ever. He could. Especially like a card game. He could set it up so that there was no advantage to any part of anything. But like, he's too important for that. And I love the way they set up the dynamic of how this family works early on in this book, like in terms of how Reed is smart, Reed patents inventions, Reed brings in the money, and that's how they can do the things that they do. And they do the things they do not because they need to bring in the money or not for anything else, but because it's what they do. Like, what was the agent in the first one, right? Oh god, what was the line? I don't remember. At the end of that issue was nice.
It was the end of issue 2, I believe. 2?
Yeah. I don't remember the line, but it was nice. Whatever it was, yeah, I liked it enough not to remember.
Like, it did a really good job of summing up what the Fantastic Four is all about. But I think in the grander scheme, it really, I think, set the tone for Mark Waid's run.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a really important thing to do when you're, you know, when you're taking over a book, and especially a book that's as high profile as Fantastic Four, because, you know, it wasn't, you know, it hasn't always been like Marvel's flagship book. I mean, that's always been the Avengers, right? But this, I mean, Fantastic Four has been around for such a long time and has been such an important piece in Marvel's portfolio that, you know, even a veteran like Mark Waid probably feels some you know, some reverence for the title.
Mm-hmm.
And so he wrapped up this quick little story arc nicely by telling us this is what this book's going to be about. They're not superheroes. They don't fight crime, you know. They're astronauts, explorers, adventurers. I found the phrase, the panel. I'm kind of paraphrasing. Do you want me to read it?
Yeah, read it.
Yeah.
Okay, he says these guys aren't superheroes. And then the guys go, the people he's talking to go, what? And then he says,
what?
Not really. They don't fight crime. They don't go on patrol. They don't have a bat signal. They're astronauts. They're envoys, adventurers, explorers. Sure, Galactus comes to town. They'll step up. Trouble finds them. They'll kick its ass. But that's not the job. It just comes with. Ask any frontiersman, any trailblazer. Maybe they've been around a while, but the only thing old about the FF is that they never stop taking us into the new.
See, that's awesome. I love that.
That's good meta right there. Yeah.
So they did that. Like you said, Andy, that was such a nice little way to say, this is what this comic's going to be all about. And what's cool is you know, there are lots of books about superheroes who go on patrol and fight crime and stuff. And this is not that kind of comic. And it's good to have different types of, you know, different comics to fill every niche that somebody would be interested in reading. I mean, you called this a cape comic when we first started the episode, but it's not a cape comic in the same way that like the Avengers are, or the Justice League, you know? I mean, they wear superhero costumes, technically, but they're not capes in the same way. When we use capes, the pejorative, you know?
Yeah, I think a good example of that is the last two issues, where they're pretty much just working to cover up their own screw-ups, or to cover up problems that exist only because of them. Right, like Johnny's wallet getting stolen, which it's not his fault, but let's face it, if he didn't need a special wallet, the guy wouldn't have stolen it. Like, there's no supervillain here, it's just some greedy motherfucker does something dumb, and the building's about to melt, and everybody's going to die. Right, and then the whole world's going to melt by, you know, moving on from there. And then the other one was the other one. Oh, some bug came back, and
yeah, Reed
and Ben had to fucking try and figure out how to fight this bug. But, like, that has nothing to do with supervillains. That has nothing to do with anything other than Reed and Ben went into this other dimension a while back and brought something back with them, and Johnny is kind of irresponsible as a CFO.
Yeah.
But it's
a cool scenario, right? It's not the type of thing you would see in most comics.
Yeah. And it works for them, too. Like, I couldn't see a story like that happening with Captain America. Right? Like, Captain America wouldn't, like... Well, I don't know. He's a little corny, too.
Well, I remember when we were reading... I don't remember which Captain America it was. But he was a... When he was a cartoonist or something. Do you remember? It was a long time ago.
Oh, yeah. It was the old one, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was one of the really old Captain Americas. Not really old. It was like 70s or... Oh, it was like a Bronze Age comic.
He's an architect, right?
No, he was like a cartoonist or artist or something. Yeah.
Huh.
And but we never saw him doing any work of that job.
Yeah.
You know what it is? It shows that these guys are more fallible, because if you think about like Steve Rogers, if you put him in the CFO position, he'd be totally responsible all the time, always.
Yeah.
And I mean, the same goes for a lot of the X-Men, or even I think Peter Parker could step up to the job pretty well.
Yeah.
Even and all the outside things would screw with him, but it'd never be his own irresponsibility.
Yeah.
And even Tony Stark, like, okay, he has a problem with alcoholism, but at the same time, he employs people who can keep his company running. Whereas this is just kind of like, I don't know, this is one of the rare instances where we see a superhero messing up something, and it's not like meant to be the world shattering setup. It's just like, oh, he's a guy who is in a job that he's not qualified for, and that happens, and whoops. Right.
Yeah. And you know, I kind of up until the last two issues, I was enjoying this, but the last two, I kind of really bought in. And you know why? Because they really reminded me of, I can't believe it's not the Justice League.
Yeah, Super Buddies. Because, I mean, that's kind of what it was.
Literally, they spent so much time just fixing problems that they had created.
And then, like, Ben and Reed were, like, pretty much they were palling around.
Yeah.
And, you know, they were doing silly things, like, you know, when they were going to shrink Ben, I thought they were going to make him, like, tiny. But they made him, like, half size. So he was, like, a little... Then Reed put the hard hat on him.
Yes.
Very cute. It's like, okay, the dude's made of rocks. In the previous issue, a building fell on him and he was okay.
Yeah.
He doesn't need a hard hat. But, you know, that's a pretty hilarious touch. And I feel like that's maybe Reed's sense of humor.
Yeah, I think so.
I don't think he did that, like, absentmindedly. He was like, you know what'll really rustle Ben's jimmies? Let's put this hard hat on him.
That's exactly how he'd phrase it. And you know what? I think if there were another, like, crossover between universes, you know, I think Johnny Storm and Booster Gold would be the best friends.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Protect the supermodels.
They'd get in so much trouble.
Oh, my God.
It'd be terrible.
They would be the best. And they're both terrible business operators.
Yeah. I'm sure that Johnny would think Booster's idea of selling out advertising space would be a great idea.
Yes.
Oh, Booster.
God, did they do that in the Fantastic Four movie? I almost feel like they did have some kind of thing on the uniform.
I think in the second movie, yeah.
Yeah, I think they actually did. Although I don't think it was Johnny's fault. I think it was just movie.
Yeah.
That movie being fucking terrible.
I think it was more of that product placement that you talked about earlier.
Yep. It's got a Hemi in it.
God.
To find that clip and put it on the Tumblr. But yeah, I really kind of unabashedly love Johnny Storm in this.
Just, I think all the characters... Oh, go ahead, sorry.
He's just fun, that's all I was going to say.
Yeah. I think all the characters really play their role in the family dynamic very well. I mean, this is like 2005, right? So this is like 40 years on... Or, yeah, for about 40 years... A little more than 40 years since their debut, and the characters have really grown into their roles. You know, Reed's like the absent-minded father who means well, but, you know, he's kind of out of touch. Sue is the mom to everybody, not just Franklin and Val. And then Johnny and Ben are like Uncle Jesse and Uncle Joey from Full House.
Nice pull.
I like that.
Yeah, Johnny Storm is the John Stamos because he's cool. And Ben Grimm's the Uncle Joey. He's Dave Coulier. That's what they should do. Yeah, they should. I was going to say they should make that. They should cast make Bob Saget as Reed Richards for the next Fantastic Four movie.
Actually, he looks like he could be stretchy. That's not a bad cast.
I don't think John Stamos could be a Johnny Storm, though.
No, I don't think so.
anyways. But yeah, I think they all play their roles very well. And because they're so well-defined and it's easy to pick up on their motivations and their roles, it really helps the reader get into the comic. Because, you know, a lot of times one thing that people like to do, or people, things that are, it's kind of a trope in comics, is that there's this, like, edgy mystery to people. Like, Wolverine's the obvious example. But I'm glad that they this comic isn't anything like that. So, you know, you really know what you're getting. You really know what the tone of this comic is going to be, and if that's something you like, you really can get into it easily. And so that's something I appreciate with this comic, you know.
So let's talk about some of the other plot points, like the quote unquote villains, right? Like we talked about how Johnny's set up to be CFO and how he's kind of set up to fail. We didn't really talk about the conniving lackeys at all, though.
Oh, Esther and Or Christie and
Christie,
Ethan.
Yes.
Yeah.
So goofy. But they were kind of enjoyable because, I don't know, they weren't the math monster. And, fuck that thing.
You weren't a fan of the math monster, huh?
No, but I didn't mind Christie and Ethan. They were very mild, and I don't think that they intended real harm. I mean, they didn't want someone who's entirely unqualified in a position of power over them, where they had to train him, and he got all the credit. So, and they weren't, like, trying to bankrupt the company. They were just going to oust him. I don't really
and
have
get
a problem.
Raise.
Yeah, well, you know, I think it was real dumb for Sue to put Johnny in the position of CFO. That's, like, redonkulous.
Yeah. Well, and that's why, you know what, I think those two issues are good for pointing out kind of Johnny's depth. Right? Like, so much is easy to read on the surface with Johnny, Protect the Supermodels. That kind of puts it all right there for him. You know? But, like, on the other side, he knows that these stupid lackeys are ganging up on him. Like, what did he say? Like, Scrolls, come on, give me a little bit of credit. Mm-hmm. You know? And I feel like, by the same time, he knows perfectly well what Sue is doing. He knows, like, he calls her out on it later on. He's like, I know you're not doing this for me. You're doing this because you feel that you did something wrong. It has nothing to do with me. And he straight up, like, calls her out on it. He's like, we can talk about this, though, later, because you gotta help me. And it's good to show that he's not, like, that. Yes, he really does want to protect the surface the supermodels. But that's only on the surface. Like, he actually wants to protect everybody. He just says that because that's what's immediately coming to mind. But his core drive is not just to save the supermodels. It's to save everyone the same way. He's like, okay, yeah, I guess I gotta do this CFO thing and I kind of don't like it. But I'm gonna do it because Sue wants me to and I don't want to disappoint my sister. That's where he changes, and that's where I really like him.
Yeah, it shows that he's a hero, and I actually think that, along with Reed, Johnny was characterized really strongly in this comic, because, I don't know, like, you get a really good sense of why he kind of is a screw-up, but on the other hand, you also see why he's part of the Fantastic Four, and not, I don't know, like, just lazing around and hanging out with babes or whatever, you know, like, he is invested in helping people. I don't know. I wouldn't say he's effective, though.
No, but his heart is in the right place.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. There you go. That's a good way to put it.
And I think that's what makes him it's easy to forgive him, I guess.
Yeah. So, we talked about that now. What about the math monster?
No.
No?
Just fuck that thing.
Why?
It's so stupid.
Why? Why is it stupid?
I have strong feelings because I had to read about it, and now I'm mad. It's math, and it's in love with Reed.
Okay,
The
only thing I thought was stupid about it was when Reed went, did you see an equal sign? Because I didn't. Okay,
that was so hokey.
That part, yes, really hokey. But I also like that that's in the first storyline because it's hokey. This is what you're getting into if you're going to keep reading the Mark Waid run. It's hokey. But as hokey as it is, it also is kind of scary. Right?
Yeah, I mean, kind of. But at the same time, It really bothered me.
Took apart Sue's arm.
Yeah, but that's fine. That doesn't annoy me. It bothered me that he was like, or it was madly in love with Reed. Like, it characterized it as, I don't know, almost a romantic. I won't say a romantic. It wasn't that, but a creepy love. It was really creepy.
Yeah, it was, but I think that's also functional in showing Reed's character, because everybody else is creeped out by it. Sue's creeped out by it, you know? It's easy to get creeped out by that, but Reed's like, wait, let me look at that analytically. What does he mean when he says that? And Reed, like, sits down. Well, he doesn't actually sit down. But, you know, he's like, he pauses almost for a moment to be like, wait, it says it loves me? What the fuck could it possibly mean by that? It's math. Like, how is this sentient expression of mathematics expressing love? Oh, expression! Nah, there we go.
It's too much for me on my, like, kitschy meter. I can't handle it. That's my problem.
I think I got legit scared of it when it, like, started to take the plates of stone off of Ben's back and arms and shit. I'm like, oh my god, that's fucking scary.
Yeah, you see some fleshy bits underneath him at one point.
Yeah. That shit ain't right. You're not supposed to see fleshy bits of Ben.
That is true.
But, you know, I think of everybody in here, the person we get the least amount of character movement on is Ben through these couple issues.
I think the bit of character development, or at least characterization we see of him, is when he, issue 2? When he, 61. Where he is going to Yancey Street to get the Yancey Street gang.
Oh, yeah.
And Johnny's trying to talk him out of going, and we get to see a little bit inside Ben's head and what he thinks about himself.
And,
that kind of characterizes him and makes him a little bit tragic.
That's true. I did forget about that bit.
I think he's a little more characterized than Sue is, actually, because he seemed to show more real emotion about being, or like how he felt about himself and how he thinks he's a monster, because we already saw that Reed felt guilty about it, but then it also played off of Reed's guilt well, because then we see Reed actually has a reason to be guilty, whereas, you know, Johnny probably enjoys being the Human Torch, and Sue, you know, there's no real deficit for her having a power like that.
Mm-hmm.
But Ben gives Reed a reason to feel bad, and he's unhappy with his powers. He'd rather just be normal. So you kind of get this twofold sense of he has some self-loathing in there. And on the other hand, he also shows a little bit about some of his team members, too. And it also shows how insensitive Johnny is to something like that. So, I don't know. I feel like Ben is goofy, especially because he has to say it's clobbering time at least, like, 3 times in every trade. But, it wasn't so bad. He wasn't, I think, that shallow.
I mean, Ben is a walking metaphor for himself, right? Rough exterior, soft on the inside, all that kind of stuff. Pretty much. But did you put in, Jen, was that you put in the notes, can we please ever have a trade of this where he doesn't use his catchphrase?
That was me.
Yeah. No, we can't. He always has to say it.
I would never write something like that.
And I think, I think that is exactly what this comic is all about. Is like, the idea that he's going to say it every time because that's who he is and that's okay. Like, the Fantastic Four, this representation of them, like, the core of who they are hasn't really changed since they've been invented. They're kind of the same people. And they've been the same forever. And we talked about how Reed was the same and Johnny's always been this way and Sue's more or less been the mother who has to hold everything together, the mother of the house. And Ben's always had these problems of self-loathing. And still, all of this is relevant and all of it works. From when they were created all the way up to 1998, when this was printed, it all still works and it's all still relevant. And it can still be enjoyable. And he can still say it's clobbering time. Like, that's exactly what it is about. And it might seem corny and, like, old, outdated, but it's still relevant and it still works. Even though it feels that way. And so, like, I think when he says it every time, I'm like, yes, good. He can still say it. it's like when Hulk says, you wouldn't like me when I'm angry. It's like, no, I won't. Yes, say it again. You're right, I won't.
Well, he's got a new catchphrase now.
Wait, which one is it? Oh, Hulk Smash?
No, I'm always angry.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That was a good line, I gotta admit.
Yeah, it was great.
I mean, just how, like, as he's turning around, he hulks out. It's pretty good stuff.
I don't know. I guess I just have a curmudgeon-y nature. Let's put it like that. Grumpy about that sort of thing.
Like, there's some part of... If you read this and enjoy it, there's some part of you that, like, probably has nostalgia for the 1950s white picket fence, Leave It to Beaver kind of family. We're not nostalgia. At least you can look at that and see some level of value in it.
Well, you know? I think in comics, like, in comics in general, and in a lot of action-type stories, it's like a dysfunctional family. And so we're used to seeing dysfunction. And the Fantastic Four are not a dysfunctional family. At least not in the same way, like... I can't think of a good example, but you know what I mean.
How about Oliver Queen?
Yeah.
Just by himself is a dysfunctional family.
Yes.
But him... But yeah, like, if you say, like, him and Roy Harper, you know...
And Dinah and...
And Dinah, yeah, they're like, a pretty dysfunctional family.
I don't know.
Speedy?
Yeah, Speedy.
I think... Oh, there's a girl, Red Arrow.
Yeah, there is. I don't remember her name, though.
Well, she was Speedy, right?
Yeah, she was Speedy for part of the Kevin Smith run, I think.
But anyway, you know what I mean? Like, so we're used to seeing, you know, we want, like, I hate to say gritty realism, but
well, I think,
but the I think the normal family dynamic isn't that people expect to see in this kind of entertainment is some level of dysfunction, and they don't really have it. They are the Leave It to Beaver, like, nice family, and it's a little bit, it's almost jarring, you know, because it's not what we're used to seeing anymore. Yeah. I mean, people now, it's the stereotype that people make fun of now. I was gonna say we were referencing Leave It to Beaver in a facetious manner, but that's exactly what this is, you know, to a degree.
Mm-hmm. You also have to take into account the fact that this is 1998, right? This is, like, right around, well, not right around, it's a little bit after, like, the death and rebirth of Superman and all of the deaths that happened in the 90s. And they weren't really deaths, and comics had to get pouches and all these kinds of things, right? Like, this is not that far removed from those kinds of comics. It's not that far removed at all. And I think what Mark Waid is doing in this first trade is saying, I promise you I will never kill any of these characters. I promise you I will never have a storyline where Reed accidentally hits his daughter. You know, like, I promise you that there will never be any hint of anything kind of like rape. Like, I promise you this comic will be fun and you'll enjoy reading it, and it's not ever going to be like that. And if you're okay with that, sit back and enjoy as the Thing punches a giant cockroach. You know, and I think that's the promise that he's making in a comic book zeitgeist that isn't like that at all. And I think it was a really bold choice and a really good way to show that comics of this age and this tone can still be relevant in exactly the same way that they were relevant before we started killing our superheroes.
I mean, there's definitely an audience for this. And, you know, a lot of the time, you know, people, the average comic book reader is like my age and, or I should say our age, like 30s, around 30 years old. But even, like, Fantastic Four predates us.
Yep.
But there's still a market for it, you know? I didn't like Fantastic Four when I was a kid, when I was reading comics as the age-appropriate, you know, being a kid, because comic books are for kids, right? But now that I'm an adult, I like Fantastic Four. I enjoyed these issues that we read. I really like the Jonathan Hickman one, and I like the Matt Fraction one, too. I think it is because I like to read something different sometimes. I'm tired I'm tired of huge event comics and, you know, people, you know, who's the next death, you know. It seems like every year something pops up on CNN where some superhero has died and people get all up in arms, and I just roll my eyes at it because I'm so used to this kind of thing.
Because you know they're not dead.
And it's not even, I don't even think it's a money grab by the comics. Okay, well, it is to a degree.
It's a lot of creative people wanting to tell a new story and not feeling like they can do it with old characters.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But this, I mean, the Fantastic Four is like, they predate the Avengers in Marvel, and they're still awesome.
Do they really?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure Fantastic Four is before Avengers. Oh, man. Somebody, if people, you know, interacted with us online, maybe someone would correct me, but I know I'm not going to get corrected, even if I'm wrong.
And none of us are going to remember to look it up tomorrow morning.
Yeah. But, so what was I saying? They're still, those characters are still relevant.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's because they all do, like, reflect... Like what we said early on with Reed, like their inner flaws are just reflected differently on how our society views them. What were you going to say before I interrupted you?
I don't remember.
Yeah, interruption win. I talk louder first. Well, then, do you guys want to move on and talk about the art a little bit?
Sure.
Sure.
Cool. I liked it.
Yes. I thought it was really well done.
I'm checking the date.
All right.
So Fantastic Four is 1961.
Okay.
Which I was pretty sure was the correct date for that. And yep, Avengers 1963. I was correct.
Damn. Cool. Yeah. So what did you think of the art, David?
I liked it. I can never pronounce his last name. Mike Wieringo.
Yes.
He's one of the greats, and he is no longer with us, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. Don't let that color your opinion of the art, no pun intended. But yeah, I really liked the art on this. It was nice. It was very colorful. There was nobody with a 5 o'clock shadow, which was nice. Everybody was clean, and it did a really nice job of it just worked with the tone of the comic, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought it was good. It was very good, very good pencil work.
Yeah, and I think Ringo did a really, really good job of using an art style. I don't know if this was his typical style or not, but the way he drew this really worked in that. You got four people using four very different powers, and you got to have one art style that looks good on all of them. That's hard to do. That's straight up. Like, you look at the, like, JLA, right? If you have bright and shiny JLA, that's great for Superman and Green Lantern, but that doesn't really work for Batman and Martian Manhunter. But if you have dark, stormy JLA, then that really doesn't work for the alternative of that. And it's like, it's a team that you, like... If you're going to draw JLA, you have to use a real neutral art style. And this does a good job of not using a neutral style. It's like the slightly cartoony bent of that idealized comic book art that you have in your mind. And it works great for all four of these characters.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Did you notice how, like, detailed the backgrounds were too?
Yes.
I really love that. I mean, for instance, there's this two-page spread where Sue and Reed are in Times Square and they have all the ads, but like the art makes it look at once kind of like it has that 1950s vibe with the advertisements, but then it also looks really modern, like comics today, and it's a good combination that represents kind of the feel of Fantastic Four along with the current style that's popular. And it's just so clean.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, I really appreciate that, the cleanliness too, because, you know, economic line work, because sometimes people get a little bit too stylistic, and I think that would definitely be inappropriate in a comic like this.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, if you get really stylistic, like, that works awesome for Human Torch and Mr. Fantastic. Not so much for Thing. Thing's not really somebody you can get stylistic with. He's a man made of rock. You know, like...
Or Sue. She's a blonde lady.
Yeah. She's a blonde woman. Not always all of the parts of a blonde woman, but blonde woman. Maybe half a blonde woman. You know, like, there's only so much you can do with that if you're going to get super stylized. Mm-hmm. It's... Plus, I gotta say, God, who did the cover for number 65? I'm pretty sure it was Ringo. The one where Johnny Storm is making a dollar sign out of flames. Did you guys see the covers of these?
Yes.
Yeah.
The cover for 65 is great. And the cover for the next issue, 67, also looks sick. Like the Doctor Doom like outfit and flames coming out of it. I just want to read it. I want to read it so bad just because the cover's so good.
Oh, number 67. What would be 67?
Yeah. But yeah, I really love the Johnny Storm money one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that cover was Wirengo.
Yeah, that's sick. I like it a lot. Anyway, you guys want to get down and rate this one?
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay. Who wants to go first?
Andy.
Ah, shit, fuck. I wasn't expecting that. 3.5.
That's pretty good.
It feels low, but I mean,
we handed out a lot of fives recently. So.
Yeah, well, you know, I feel like this is a really, really good comic. But all we've been saying it over and over. This comic strikes a particular tone and carries a particular vibe. And if you're cool with that, if you're cool with Mike Waid's promise that nobody's gonna die, there's no gonna be gritty realism anywhere. This is going to be squeaky, shiny, and fun. If you're cool with that, you will enjoy this comic. I don't feel like it's ever going to really blow you away. It might. But the promise that he makes combined with this level of quality, if you're into it, you could read this entire run, and I'm certain you would have a great time the entire way. And it's hard to find a comic that can give you a promise like that that you're so sure will follow through. And just that alone is worth so much. But you got to be into it. You got to be okay with the Leave It to Beaver. You got to be okay with the white picket fence around the Baxter Building. If you are, great. If you aren't, you're going to have to look elsewhere. And I think it's because it strikes that particular tone, I'm not giving it a 5. Because this isn't a comic that would work for everyone, you know? I feel like a 5 is something that I want to hand to every person I ever meet. And as much as I really, really enjoyed reading this, I don't feel like it has that kind of universal appeal. Maybe I should bump it up to a 4, though, because I really want to underscore the balls it took for Mark Waid to make this bright, happy comic in the late 90s. And to make it work, too. So, I don't know. I'll leave it 3.5, but I probably should have said 4. I'll leave it at that. David, you go next.
All right, so I'm going to give it a 4. And, you know, Andy, you mentioned that this is something that would appeal to somebody who likes what Mark Waid is doing with the comic. And I got to say, I'm picking up what he's putting down. So I really do enjoy this comic.
Word, G.
Oh. I like this type of comic, everyone. I like other things too, other types of comics. I like seeing Wolverine or, you know, get gritty and realistic or Punisher or something every once in a while. But I read comics for the fun of it, and this is definitely a fun comic. And it's good to have like a bit of a breath of fresh air every once in a while. Because it is a superhero comic, but it's not at the same time, and it's a nice change. Would I recommend this to everybody? Probably not. But if somebody was curious about Fantastic Four, I think this is a good place to start. you know, the Jonathan Hickman run's great. The Matt Fraction run's also really good. But I think this is a good starting point because even in just these first two issues, you really get a good introduction of who these characters are.
Yeah, this is classic FF.
So it sets a great tone, not just for Mark Waid's run, but for what Fantastic Four, at least in my opinion, should be about. So, 4.
All right. Jen?
I'm going to give this a 3.5. I did enjoy it. I thought the math monster was super hokey. I'm still, like, grumpy about that. But I don't know. Like, I thought that this was perhaps one of the best characterizations of Reed Richards that I've ever seen. And by best, I mean he was actually likable. I tend to walk away really disliking Reed. And I thought that he was just delightful in this comic. He had great humor and personality and depth, and that was really nice. Same with Johnny. I mean, I think a lot of the time he can be portrayed as either being like the wild child or a bit petulant. And here we actually get to see him be clever in a funny way. The art was really good. And my only like real problem with it is that I feel like they could have done a little more with Sue. Because they talked a little about how she felt bad for raising Johnny poorly, in her view, but I don't think she got as much attention as, like, Ben and Johnny and Reed did, and I think she has really cool powers and has potential to be a really interesting character, and she's often not played up as much as she could be. So I would have liked to see more about her. But, I mean, you know, when I complain about things being really goofy, I understand that it's, you know, like, some people really like that, and it's not for everyone, and I'm part of that not for everyone group. but at the same time, like, it's good that this sort of thing exists and is being published, and it's an enjoyable read. Like, there wasn't a moment that I was reading this that I didn't enjoy. So that's pretty good praise, I'd like to think. So, yeah, 3.5.
All right. Awesome. Sick. So, that's it for this week. Next week, we're going to read FF Volume 1 by Jonathan Hickman with art by Steve Epting. This is the run from 2011, collecting issues number 1 to number 5. And don't be confused, there's another FF that started issue number 1 like a year after that one did. If you want to know for sure that you're reading the right thing, go to our website, www.apsupercast.com. On the right, there's a button that says Future Shows. Click on that bad boy, and boom, there'll be a link to Amazon. You click on that, and that's the one we're reading. That's it. That's what I link to. That's what we're reading. That's it.
All right.
If you got a suggestion for what we should read after this, send us an email and let us know at
AtomicPoweredSupercast@gmail.com. You can also send any corrections to us there.
Oh, yes. Especially if I forget to cut out one of those times when I stumble over my own tongue, let me know so I can go back and cut it out and repost this. and there's the social media stuff, facebook.com/APSupercast, twitter.com/APSupercast, and apsupercast.tumblr.com. And as always, please subscribe to us on
iTunes.
Yeah. All right, everybody. Till next week.
Goodbye.
Bye. Goodbye.